Okay. So no agenda. This is completely Q&A, so don't feel shy. Go ahead and I'll turn it over to you guys. Feel free to jump in with questions, concerns. What is going on, guys? Yep, go ahead. You can unmute yourself, Joan.
Okay, thank you. I have a, excuse me, a 4-month-old soft-coated Wheaton Terrier. And she loves people, but on, what was it, December 23rd, I decided to introduce her to people in my cul-de-sac on leash. I went to the first house and brought a little candy gift along with that. Unfortunately, they have 3 dogs and they're larger, enormous golden retriever, one of those platinum blonde ones, got out of the house when the man opened the door and he went and attacked my dog. And I was able to hold her back. And then there was this kind of scuffle and I think he was shocked, and he's an older man, he's probably 76, whatever. And so I got worried, but you know, and they apologized, and I later found out that the dog is not too friendly, their dog, on walks with other dogs. So I didn't even know that. And they live right next door. So what happened is I took her to puppy class this past Monday, and for her first puppy class, and she was real skittish toward the other dogs. And I've never had this happen with puppies or dogs before in my life. So I'm worried that kind of attack, I mean, she didn't get injured, but that was avoided. But I'm just wondering how I should handle that going forward. Okay. And it's winter here. I live in Minnesota, so it's not like I can be out walking every day. And you know what I'm saying? So, especially with ice. So I just wonder what your advice may be, maybe when I bring her back to puppy class this coming Monday. I don't know what, I'm just concerned because I've never had this happen before. And my intent was to train her to be a therapy dog. And if she's going to be pretty skittish, I mean, whoa, I guess I got concerned.
Okay. So it's a good reminder to all of us review the module on savvy socialization. There's a lot of content in there. Gail did an excellent job of writing that up. And so anytime we have experiences that are a little overwhelming or legitimately scary for a puppy, go back and review that, because it's a good kind of guideline for how we should be handling socialization with our puppies, especially if we're basically kind of their benevolent leader. We set the tone, we set the pace, mm-hmm. and how we can have experiences be positive and confidence boosters for our puppies. Okay. So I would say go ahead and review that. And, you know, I'm so sorry this happened. Don't beat yourself up, because life does happen. We can't control all variables and stimuli that our dogs are exposed to. So from here going forward, I wouldn't be so concerned that, yes, it's winter and you're not going to be out and about a whole lot, mm-hmm. For a couple of reasons. You are better off for your puppy to have really good positive experiences because of what she's getting in that puppy class.
Okay.
The instructors are supervising and they are making sure that everything is positive for all the puppies. Mm-hmm. So it's understandable that your little one is going to be a little overwhelmed and a little timid with other dogs now, because what happened was scary. Mm-hmm. So she's going to have, you know, a greater amount of positive experiences now to kind of cancel out that one bad experience. So right. Even though, thank goodness, she wasn't physically injured, a lot of times those emotional injuries take longer for a dog to rehab and recover from. So okay. When you are going to puppy class, part of what you're going to be reminded when you review savvy socialization is that be very aware of what your energy level is. If we are anxious, if we are worried, it goes right down the leash and they sense it. They feel it. And then if they are worried already, whatever we're feeling, if we're feeling anxious, it kind of justifies what they're feeling, right? Mm-hmm. So if they're already anxious and then we're anxious, it's a nasty little cycle and spiral because puppy is saying, see, I'm right. She's worried too. Mm-hmm. So take a deep breath. When you're in puppy class, know that the instructors have it under control. If she's a little overwhelmed, you want to back away and give her space so that you're not forcing her into interactions with the other puppies. And laughing, if we're smiling and if we're laughing, we're breathing normally. It sounds corny, but it does make a difference.
It works. Okay.
It does. It really, really does. And because it's winter and you want to get her out and have positive experiences with just people, hey, remember our option to go to Home Depot, to go to Lowe's, things like that, where she can be on a leash and she can be meeting lots of people, but it's an environment where you can really control things, all the variables, so that you're making sure it's positive for her and that it's a fun experience. And even if she sees another dog at Lowe's, they're going to be on leash, mm-hmm. and you're going to be watching her. So if she sees that dog two aisles down and she, she's a little worried, don't go and approach the other dog. Mm-hmm. Stay where you're at and just acknowledge and reward her. Did you see that dog? Good girl. Look at that dog. Mm-hmm. Make it a fun thing, even if she's needing distance for right now. Okay.
Okay. Super. Yeah. Thank you.
So positive interactions and socialization do not always mean that our dogs have to be touched by humans or that they have to have nose-to-nose greetings with another dog. Absolutely not. They're processing a lot of info even from a distance. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Yep.
So she had one bad experience, but you've got lots of opportunities to kind of compensate for that with a lot of really structured, controlled, positive ones so that they're going to eventually cancel out that one. Okay.
Good.
And even for dogs that haven't had a scary experience like your puppy had, mm-hmm. some puppies get to puppy class and that off-leash playtime is completely overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't even mean that anything scary happened. It's just that, wow, this is a lot and this is new. And my puppy, Frankie, our youngest, she was the same way for the first 3 weeks of puppy class. She mm-hmm. was kind of, whoa, I don't know about this. Mm-hmm. That was fine. Just let her take it at her pace. And I think by the third or fourth week, she was out there romping around and tearing around and acting like a happy, confident little puppy. Okay.
Good. Good. Okay. Thank you for your insights.
Take a breath. It'll happen. Okay. What else is going on, guys?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So I have a 11-week-old Connie Corso and okay. I have two small Chihuahuas in wonderful group.
The other. Wow.
I know. And they play wonderful. They get along great. But he, of course, is a puppy. He tends to bite a lot. And I'm trying to find a medium where he knows you can, you know, playing with the dogs, you're biting, it's okay, versus with humans. I mean, he goes for the hands quite often. Do you have any tips on breaking him from that? Kind of, mm-hmm. you know, having them understand what the difference is?
Absolutely. So question first of when he's playing with the little Chihuahuas, if he starts to play a little bit too rough, do the chihuahuas correct him? And does he listen to that? Does he respect it?
Yes and yes.
Perfect. Excellent. Good, good, good. Because then he's learning very good dog communication and dog body language. So that is perfect. Okay. So as far as with people, of course, when we have big breed dogs, we want to be very careful that they are learning to be completely careful with our wimpy human flesh. Mm-hmm. People can easily misinterpret even taking treats out of the hand of, I felt a tooth, your dog bit me.
Right.
So, when you are, have you found the module on taglines yet?
I haven't. I'm very new to good dogs. I just started with you guys. So,
okay, excellent. So I would say that one of the strategies that we have for working with, working on biting and puppy mouthing, which is completely normal, is going to be using a tagline. And that module is going to be under the section for manners. So if you find that square block that says manners and click on it, you're going to find the info about taglines.
Okay.
So that is one of the strategies that we use to kind of redirect that. And other things to keep in mind as well with mouthing is, remember that puppies usually have a witching hour during the day. Okay, very familiar with that already. So those are points in time in the day, just like with human toddlers, where basically they're tired. They can't physiologically play nicely anymore. So when those times of the day happen, acknowledge what it is. Don't waste time trying to redirect the biting behavior because it's, they're tired, they're frustrated. So just go ahead and put them in their crate or their X-Pen with, you know, a smeared Kong or a chew toy. They might fuss, but I bet you money, they're soon going to be taking a well-deserved and needed nap. Okay. Other things with mouthing people, if it is kind of the herding behavior where you are walking through the house and they're trying to get your ankles or your pant legs.
Yes.
Okay. Strategy that seems to work best for that is going to be a combination of the tagline. And if you are on the Facebook page, I have a good video of working on just that with a particular puppy from my last litter. So if you just do a search on that Facebook page for tagline, it's an easy video to pick up because I'm wearing these really obnoxious leopard print pajama bottoms. So that's an easy one to find. So tagline. And a combination of stop the world for that herding behavior. So if they're getting our pant legs or getting our shoelaces, if we keep on moving, we're essentially continuing the game and making it more fun because we're kind of making it into a game of tug. So stop the world is just where you would just stop all your motion, stop what you were doing with the puppy, giving them a chance of offering a different behavior. So essentially they're bored, they're playing with their pant leg, and then you stop all your motion. They're going to get a little confused for a second of where did the fun go? How come I'm not getting what I want? And they might stop the behavior. They might offer you a different behavior like sit or et cetera, which then you can acknowledge and praise. Okay.
Okay.
Let's see here. The other thing that for mouthing with people is that we do encourage people. I wouldn't bother with that kind of old method of where the human will do puppy yelping, where you're trying to imitate the noise of a puppy. I would not suggest that, because for a lot of puppies, what that ends up doing is increasing their arousal level, and then they will bite harder and more persistently because you've kind of upped the ante and made the game even more fun. Okay. So I generally just tend to be quiet. I won't yip. If anything, my common redirect for anything is just, ha-ah. It's a pretty unique noise. It's kind of guttural. And so hopefully it's just going to get their attention for a moment, interrupt the naughty behavior.
Okay.
But find the module on the taglines and start with that. Give it a try and let me know how that is going. Other little things that people will try is even to put the bitter apple product on their hands when they are playing with puppy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it will work. There's lots of different options that we can try. And the other thing that I always tell people is that when we're playing with our puppies, so we're actively engaged, make sure that you are not using tiny, tiny toys. So, and I'm sure you're not with a Cana, but with a Corso, but get toys that are even bigger. The point being there is if you are playing tug, if you are playing with this toy, they're still developing their motor skills. And so if your toy is this big, Corso mouth is this big, your hand is here, you're not leaving puppy a lot of room for air to be putting mouth on the toy and not missing and getting your hand.
That makes sense. Okay.
So especially with a Corso, I would get really big toys.
Okay, especially perfect.
Like with my Ridgebacks, when I'm playing tug with them, it is at least 3 feet long.
Oh, good to know. Okay.
Okay. Frankie, really?
Large toys.
Hey,
perfect.
Sarah,
thank you.
I have a quick question off of her question.
Sure.
You may recall that I have a very persistent little 17-week mix. And we've tried that, like, stop the world. I'm just going to sit here and I totally ignore you. And she'll just bite your sweater, pull on it, bite your hand. And if you try to move, she'll just to like grab the spray bottle or grab her tagline. She just bites your hand as you're trying to move to like respond to her.
Okay. So with your girly, because she is pretty persistent, for most situations, stop the world is probably not going to work for her.
No.
Because it's too subtle for her.
She doesn't get it.
Yeah. She says, I'll just try harder. Hold on 1 second. I'm writing quick note here about what we're talking about. Okay. So if for her, I would say that you're going to be needing some interruption, some redirection that's going to be more overt, more obvious for her. So with her, I would definitely say that it's going to be either the squirt bottle or going to be the tagline. So did you find the video on the Facebook page of the taglines? Okay. So you can see a couple times in that video where the tagline's not at a good angle on Mikey's neck. And so I'm just moving calmly to rearrange. And so I'm not moving quickly. I've got to hurry up and get there because that's going to encourage him biting my hands. So just calmly taking the time to reposition the tagline and then doing that little correction and being patient and waiting. Even though we want to be pulling with that tagline straight directly vertically, you can implement that of you're not going to be pulling the tagline in an oblique angle. You're still pulling it up, but you can kind of shift your body back so that you're bending over from the waist so that your pant legs, your shoes, your hands are out of biting range and distracting her until you get that, I'm frustrated, I'm frustrating, fine, I'll stop biting. And then you release the pressure. Okay. And with, you know, and with the squirt bottle, if she's just going, you know, you're reaching for the squirt bottle and she's going after your hand, you can even, you know, once you've got the squirt bottle, put it behind your back for a moment and wait, you know, just see if she's momentarily, split second, going to stop going for the squirt bottle. You might even have to tag team this with your husband or whoever else is in the household, where he's on a different sofa and he's got a squirt bottle. Okay. So you can have tactical team effort on this. And that's going to be kind of a nice lesson for her as well of, you know, darn it, they both know this.
She'll go to the other person. Like if one of us tries to ignore her, she's like, oh, see you later. I'm going to whoever else is here with me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you are going to kind of have to employ some tag team, just like with kids where, you know, they'll ask dad and dad says no. So then they go and ask mom to see if they get a different answer. Same thing.
Got it.
So you guys are presenting a united front and the expectations are the same and the rules and the consequences are the same. It's going to help her learn a lot faster.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right.
Sarah, I wonder if I was, this is Joan, and Jersey is now 5 months old. I'm wondering, first of all, it's really, really getting cold in Boston. And I'm wondering about something I read about paw wax. Do you, is that important in terms of the cold out here?
Well, it's not so much, it is partially the cold, but more than that, it is the salt, the products, the de-icer products that people will put on sidewalks. So if you're doing a lot of leash walks, neighborhood leash walks, where there's going to be a lot of that de-icer, it can be very hard on their pads and their pads can dry out and start to crack. So you can't, yeah. Just like us with, you know, winter hands, right? You know, hang nails and dry skin. So there are a couple products. You can always try the little booties.
So you do think that's good. Okay.
Absolutely. That's one option if you can get your girl to tolerate them. So usually dogs will tolerate those a lot better if they are in motion and you're continuing the walk. So for example, if you're walking, they might happily be like, okay, whatever. But the second you get home or you stop at a stoplight, then they might sit down and be trying to, right, remove their little booties. So there's plenty of different options as far as little dog boots that you can purchase. But another thing that you can be doing is it's not necessarily a wax, mushers. I always forget if it's mitt or paws. Nancy, do you remember mushers mitt, mushers paw?
I saw it online, so I don't remember either, but it is there it is, mushers paw.
Mushers something. I know they have it on Amazon, and that is a good one that you can put on before you go for a long neighborhood leash walk. That is going to kind of not only moisturize that tissue that's on their pads so that it is more supple and is going to be less prone to cracking and drying out, but it's also going to be a little bit of a protective barrier. Word to the wise, it is pretty greasy. So if you put this on and you're not going for a walk, I would have puppy, you know, go in their crate or something. Otherwise, you're going to have greasy wiped off on your couch.
Do it like right before you leave the door, like on like a doormat, because this, to Sarah's point, like if they step on like a hardwood floor, you'll have paw prints everywhere and it will get slippery.
Yeah. It's like putting Pledge on a hardwood floor.
Okay. So would that replace having to put on dog boots or? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. And you'll just need to keep on reapplying. So for example, with our dogs, with lure coursing, which is, you know, like a fake rabbit hunt in the summer, if we are going to areas where it's been very dry, like Texas or something like that, the ground can get really hard packed, and then they can slip a pad from running and running really hard in the traction. So we use musher's paw like year round, because okay. Same thing there, because it's just going to keep that the tissue on their pads moisturized and supple so that it's more flexible.
So even on the sand, you know, on the beach in the summertime, when the pavement's really hot in the summer.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. Just kind of like us of, you know, you keep that skin on your hands and your feet moisturized.
Yeah.
You're not going to get the gross cracking.
Thank you. Could I ask another question about something else? More about training. I'm trying to help Jersey walk on a leash instead of, and she'll do that in our backyard. But when we get into walks in the woods, when she knows she's going to be finding other dogs to play with, she is, or even on the street, just exploring, she is just tugging, you know. Even if I say walk and I'm holding the harness, she's on a harness now and holding her back, her little feet are going like she's trying to run, even though I'm keeping her back. So do you have any suggestions about helping her learn to walk on the leash nicely, even if we are meeting other puppies? She's excited, or is she just too young?
Nope.
Okay.
not too young to start learning. Absolutely not. So, a couple things with that. In the module that talks about leash manners, mm-hmm. at the end, if you scroll down to the end of that section, there is one exercise that you're specifically working on desensitizing with distractions. So, right. So any distraction of what puppy wants and they start to pull. So in that example, in the leash module, it initially has us using like a bowl, not a dog bowl, but like a little Tupperware bowl or something with some dog treats in it or a favorite toy. And you are going to be practicing in the house. So initially that item that they want is going to be fairly far away, like 10 feet away or et cetera. And you are going to be practicing your leash manners 10 feet away and working. You can be using a leave it command. You can also be using an easy command. That's what I use with my dogs. As far as I can see that they see something when they're on leash that they're about to start pulling, and I tell them easy. And so that is their reminder of, oh, got to put some slack back in the leash.
So I like that teaching easy. What would be the marker and the reward would be? How do you teach them what easy means?
So you would do that in conjunction with doing this training, the distraction. So okay. the second she starts to pull and put some tension in that leash, you would tell her easy. And then if you need to do a back away, remember our back aways, you put a treat and have her little nose turn around while you are taking a couple steps back. Once there's slack in the leash. Yes. Market
okay.
treat.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So they start to have an understanding of the relationship between putting slack back in the leash is what easy means. Okay.
Perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah. So read through the section on the leash manners at the bottom where it talks about using that distraction training.
Perfect.
Because yeah. then she's going to start to learn an easy command, and what she eventually gets to is you've been doing this nice little healing pattern 10 feet away from the bowl of treats or the toy. And when she has, you know, 5 seconds initially or 10 seconds initially of slacking that leash, part of her reward is, okay, release word. And then she gets to go, you both go. And you can even jog over to those treats so that you're keeping slack in that leash. Okay. So there again, the consequence, what she sees is, I have good leash manners. Now I get to go and have what I want.
Perfect.
That's part of my reward. Okay. Harness. You're using a harness again.
I'm using a harness. This was our way of trying to control her, because I'm really worried about her trachea. She absolutely will kill herself rather than slow down. So that's why we put the harness on. I know you don't really like that.
Is it a harness that attaches in the back over her spine?
Yes. Well, okay. either way, the front or the back. I'm using it on the back and sometimes on the front, but I'm sorry. I don't know if you heard me. My screen froze. You heard me?
No. Okay. Yep. Gotcha. So just a reminder for everybody that the harnesses that have the leash attachment on the dog's spine, it actually encourages our dogs to pull. Because if we think about the Iditarod, what do they put on those dogs so that they can pull with all their might? They put harnesses on them, because then the dog can throw all their body weight into that chest strap. And then they can be more successful with dragging us around, and it becomes self-reinforcing. So that's why I really don't like using harnesses. It can make your leash manners worse. Okay. There are the training harnesses that are no pull harnesses that attach in the front. Those can be a better training tool, but the compromise and the risk there is they have been shown to cause orthopedic elbow and shoulder issues.
Oh, okay.
Right. So there are a couple other things that you can do. I put a video on the Facebook page not that long ago. We went for a hike on Christmas Eve. So in a pinch, you can use with a long, long 6-foot leash, have to have a long leash. You can actually wrap it under their belly just in a pinch so that it is, you're dragging me all over. So let's do this so that temporarily you've got some good leash manners, good puppy. Okay. Then I can undo that, use it like a normal leash again.
Okay.
And if things are going smoothly, yay, puppy gets to continue to walk with it like a normal leash. But if they start to pull again and they're not listening to their easy command, then I can quick do that with the leash again. Okay. So that is an option. With the no pull harnesses, the other thing that people, they're not using them correctly. They use them as crutches, and they don't become a temporary training tool. They become a permanent thing. So with the harnesses, if you're using those no pull harnesses and you've got that attached on the front, I would still have a normal flat buckle collar on them so that if things are going very, very nicely with the leash attached on the front, then puppy gets acknowledged for that nice behavior and they get rewarded by having the leash attached to their collar.
Nice, nice.
If things are continuing to go well, it stays that way. But if they start to pull again, okay, then we transfer it back to the front. Okay.
Right? Yeah.
And with the trachea damage, and if you've got, you know, a puppy that's really, really doing a lot of pulling, a couple other things that will greatly reduce that is the surface area. So a lot of people with sight hounds, just because the neck to head ratio is very strange with sight hounds like greyhounds and whippets, and so flat buckle collars tend to just pop off of them. So there are collars that are called premier collars, but you can get them where they're very thick. And the thicker the collar, you are displacing the pressure over a larger surface area, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is something that you can try. And they come in really pretty patterns and different colors.
People and they're called premier collars is the name of the...
Those are kind of the boring ones. Those are just kind of one color, Sighthound, Lupine. So if you do a Google search for any of those words, you should be able to find those options.
Okay. And
there are a lot of people on like Etsy that make these. And I thought I had one in here. Oh, it's back out in the garage, but you can get, they're really pretty. So that's another option. Another option to minimize trachea damage is instead of a flat buckle collar that is narrow, again, is that you can also get, I should really leave this stuff in here. One of the tools that I like to use is just they can be called a traffic lead or just a slip lead. But they are basically the collar and leash is all in, it's just one piece of rope.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And then they have a slide so that what you're essentially doing is you're adjusting the leash to be the appropriate collar size for the dog. But then the key is where the collar goes. So you're adjusting it so that the collar is way up here, right underneath their jawbones. And it's basically like a horse. If you have control of the head, you have control of the body. And as far as the trachea, with that lead being up here, mm-hmm. you can do it on yourself. I sound yeah. funny, but it doesn't hurt versus if you were pressing like a flat buckle collar would, I sound funny. And right. yeah, this does hurt. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. I like slip leads and that's what I use most of the time. So
thank you yeah. very much.
Okay. You have a question related to that, Joan? I yeah, see you, Kate.
I have a question on, is the gentle leader similar or do you not like the gentle leader?
Full disclosure.
Uh-huh.
I do use a gentle leader when I am rollerblading with a dog. Right. I know some people that when they are biking, they will use a gentle leader because heaven help us if a squirrel crosses our path, uh-huh. you know, I'm going to have a head injury. So the gentle leader does give you a huge amount of control. They are difficult to train because dogs don't like them and they spend most of their time trying to get it off with their paws or using your crotch to try and wipe it off. And of course, if you look at how a gentle leader works, they can be very, very dangerous because you know, it kind of comes from the equestrian world as well of it's kind of like a halter on a horse, right?
Right, right.
However, look at anatomically, horses' necks are built so much differently. They are structurally so much stronger than a dog's neck. And so if a dog does bolt ahead, they, you know, the risk of having a neck injury, it's there. It's definitely there. So, you know, user beware, think about that. So I do use one, but I only use one after my dogs have good leash manners. And it's only when we are going rollerblading, just so that I don't end up with a head injury. Okay. If you do opt for one of those, you have to use the same principles as with a no pull harness. So little leash strap is over the muzzle. They've got good leash manners. Excellent. They get rewarded by this gets slid off and then it's like a normal collar. Good. Things are going well. They're still having nice leash manners. It stays that way. When they start to pull again, nose strap goes back on. Okay. And in the grand scheme of things, with, you know, as far as what gives you the most control, and can keep you safe without getting, you know, a shoulder injury or pulled to the ground, actually a prong collar is one of the safest things that's going to give you the most control. Really? The problem being there is people don't fit them correctly. They use prongs that are way too big.
Okay.
Right. So better to have smaller prongs and have a lot of them. And there again, it shouldn't be hanging. It should be up high and tight. And what are you doing? My puppy is seeing ghosts. I don't know. All of a sudden she's just staring at the wall. What are you doing? Okay. So if anybody's going to consider prong collars, please contact me privately so that I can make sure that you are fitting it correctly. Okay. Because, hey, any training tool can be abused and used incorrectly. But for my Ridgeback puppies and for some of their puppy owners that live in cold, icy states, uh-huh, and they're trying to walk their puppies, I'd much rather that they're using a correctly fitted prong collar than okay, a no pull harness.
Good. Okay. Thanks. Great. Great tips. Thank you.
Okay. And let's see, Cynthia or Caitlin, you want to go ahead and unmute yourself? I know you've been hands up for a long time there.
Thank you. So yeah, Cindy here with a 9-month-old little spaniel. And she has taken to chasing the light that reflects off of the door when we let her outside. And so her recall is just down the tubes if she wants to get that light. So on the one hand, it's really cute. On the other hand, it's kind of annoying. She'll come to the door, not because she wants in, but because she wants us to open it so that the light will, you know, reflect on the fence, and she'll go after it. So I'm wondering, you know, if I need to, I'm trying to, you know, every time she does come to treat her, but do I need to leash her to go potty? I mean, I know there was something in your literature about, you know, you want them to be let out when they go to the door, right? If they go to the door, they need to be let out. So I don't know. Can you help me reverse this?
So
I think limit this playtime.
Well, what a creative toy she's found. That's great.
It's cute.
So, because she's liking to chase the reflection, hey, she wants to play like a cat, go get a cheap laser pointer and doodle it around on the floor and let her chase it. One of my dogs, he loves chasing the laser pointer. I can make him do figure eights and do all these crazy things by just chasing the laser pointer. Okay. It's going to be, you know, and hey, it's a great way to burn off energy, puppy energy, without you having to do a lot of work. Go for it. But to help, you know, untouch that chasing of the reflection with potty time, what I think you should do is that when she is asking to go out, you don't want to ignore in case it is a legit potty need. So I would acknowledge that, but yes, take her, excuse me, take her out to potty on a leash, so that you are taking her out. She does her chores. She goes potty. She gets praise. And then she can be off leash to chase the reflection if she wants. But if she's on leash and she's not potting and it's very obvious she just wants to chase the reflection, okay, then we're going back inside. Okay. So that way you are kind of, you know, having a disconnect between the two. She has to do the potty if she wants to have the free time to play this silly game. Okay. But you are right that don't ignore the request to go potty because it might be legitimate. Okay.
That's
that
great.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you. Can I ask another quick question?
Yeah.
Do you have on your module, or can you give me a couple of games or suggestions for getting her to connect better, or rather the 8-year-old big brother to connect better with her? you know, do we just let them do their thing? I mean, is it okay that they don't seem to connect really well? Or is there something we can do to encourage a little bit cozier relationship?
Sure. Okay, so let me quick write a note about what we just talked about with other dogs. Wet Pacino. Yeah, you're the laser pointer fool. Yes, you are. Okay, so part of this might just be age, where, you know, hey, there are a lot of adult dogs that don't particularly care for puppies. And that's kind of understandable. So don't force the issue. It might just be a maturity thing that will happen in time. And as puppy calms down and starts to be a little bit more respectful, what I would be watching for is when they do interact, if the adult dog is giving puppy some redirection of, I don't want to play right now, or you're playing too rough, watch to make sure that puppy is actually being respectful and kind of, you know, minding the communication that the other dog is giving. If puppy is not responding to that communication, then yes, I think you should step in and be referee of give the adult dog a break. Okay. And your adult dog, that's going to help your relationship with the older dog. We should not expect adult dogs to just be punching bags and babysitters. So if they're doing their best to communicate and teach manners, but puppy is not buying it, we need to step in and help for both of their sake. Okay. So some active things that you can do is if leash manners are going well with puppy, have them go for walks together. A lot of times what is going to be helpful is if you can have two people so that one of you has puppy and the other person has the leash for the older dog. So that way you can still actively be working on polite leash manners with the puppy. It's really hard to do both at the same time. And other little training sessions within your house. So if we are teaching dogs new behaviors, you always have your training sessions with one dog at a time. Okay, if we're learning new things. But for example, if they both know sit, they both know a hand touch, or they both know down or some other tricks, you know, back up, bow, you can have them be sitting next to each other and working on these little things. So it would be, you know, one puppy of Pacino, touch, excellent, gets a treat. Puppy, touch, okay, kind of have them off to the sides, not right next to each other. But this way they're kind of having tandem training and good associations with, look, I'm earning treats with the other dog here. And look it, we're both learning. We're both being so smart. We're being good dogs. Yes, they do feel those things. So that can be one thing that can be a simple, quick thing. Commercial comes on the TV, grab a handful of treats, do that. That's going to help them build good associations with each other in a structured way of not just free for all wrestle fest. Okay. And another thing that you can do that's kind of related to this is just teaching them to kind of what I say, take turns, but you're going to have them sitting again, one dog kind of to your right, one dog kind of to the left, have them sit, have a handful of treats, and you are going to give them a treat. They have to take turns and be respectful with each other. So it would be Pacino, give the treat. And then Harper, give the treat over there. If one dog starts to get up and kind of intrude in proximity on the other dog, not only the space, but pushing, is it my turn yet? Then you would just kind of turn your body, step your knee out so that you're just blocking their access to each other. That is really good for teaching inhibition to young puppies and just taking your turn and being respectful of each other. That's a really good, really good exercise.
Thank you.
Okay. And let's see. Caitlin,
Hey, how are you? So I have two questions. I have a 9-week-old golden retriever puppy, and we have 2 4-year-olds as well. That one you're hearing is Friday. She's a husky cow mix, and the other one's a corgi. So
can you see this?
Of course, it's just, you know, now when it's my chance to talk.
Of course.
Let's see. So, right here, hey, has been humping since we brought him home. I have never had a male this early. I'm attributing it, I believe, to mostly excited play. I've been trying to redirect with toys that he can play with other than, you know, a leg or the couch. But I just want to make sure I'm doing the right thing because, I mean, clearly he's too young to be neutered. And I know that doesn't always help. But this is my first time with a male that is doing this behavior this early.
Okay. And it sounds like he is just not selective, that he's humping legs, furniture, other dogs. Okay. All right. So, well, Goody's not picky, you know?
No, not at all.
Okay. So a thing to remember with humping behavior is that it is usually not a sexual behavior. It is a testing of dominance. And so he's kind of testing everything in the world. Am I the boss of this couch? Am I the boss of this human? Am I the boss of this dog? Okay. So I definitely would put the kibosh on this and not necessarily offer him a toy to redirect. Okay. Because the risk that we can have is, hopefully your other dogs will step in and correct him in no uncertain terms for this behavior of, hey, whippersnapper, you don't hump me. You are not the boss. Okay. If they can give appropriate corrections with that, excellent. That is what we want him to learn, because the risk and the concern is at some point he's going to try this with the wrong dog, and the correction he gets is not going to be an appropriate one, right? So I would definitely be putting the kibosh on that of, you know, if you're using the tagline, I would be giving him a tagline correction for that. If he's very persistent, I would even go to the next step of using a squirt bottle. You're not saying anything. You're just going to squirt to interrupt the behavior. The second he stops the humping for a moment, good boy, good boy, off. Okay. Off is 4 feet on the ground. If he is just in a maniacal kind of witching phase, right? When they're tired, they can start the humping even more. So if that's what you're seeing and your attempts to redirect are not working, I would go ahead and put him in the crate for a little time out. He might just fall asleep and take a nap. Okay.
Tracy, easy.
But I would definitely be stopping that because, for example, even intact boys that are stud dogs. So my Mr. Pacino, he is 5 years old. He's intact. Just because he's got his gonads does not mean that he gets to go around humping everything.
Right.
Okay. So he learned early on of there's a time and a place.
Right.
But that's, you know, being the boss.
Okay. Second question. So it's actually with my husky hound mix, my little bargain bin puppy for $25. She is the only female in the house, animal wise. And I have noticed that with the puppy, she does a little bit of the rolling behavior, which he's submissive to her. He automatically lays down and lets her correct him. But she also does this strange mouthing gesture, usually on the back of his neck or on like his torso. And she'll kind of lay on him a little bit. I don't know when is too much and when is just enough.
So what it sounds like, what I'm guessing is when she's doing this strange mouth behavior, is it kind of like she's eating corn on the cob while she's doing
Let's see. I don't know if she's going to do it. She normally, it's when he's playing, she'll almost put her mouth around the back of his neck and kind of lay him down and kind of lean into him. She is about 55 pounds. So she is larger than he is by like 45 pounds. It's usually starts with the correction and the rolling of him. And then it ends with, her mouth on his neck, which is currently soaking wet because she just did it. So yeah.
Okay. So thank you for the additional detail. So what is going on there? Is that she has given him a correction of attempting to roll him, or she's attempted to ignore him. So she's upping the ante.
Okay.
So it's, you're still not listening to me. Either you're still playing too rough. And then, so she's putting, you'll see mother dogs do this to baby puppies with a litter. They will put their entire mouths over the back of a puppy's neck and just kind of hold them there.
Yes.
And it is basically just saying, settle down, young man.
Okay.
So I would be watching this to see, you know, some dogs can kind of just be bossy and they're being bullies. So watch to see, was there a preamble? So is the young puppy playing rough, not listening to milder corrections and feedback from this dog, and then it's escalating to the neck pinning.
Okay.
And puppies responding to that. That is an okay sequence of events.
Okay.
But some dogs, you know, can be bullies where it's kind of like they're the nun on the playground. It's just no one gonna have fun. So it's that we don't want her doing that if it's
to be a bully.
Yes.
Yeah.
it's not justified, because that is a pretty stern correction from an adult dog. So, because you can have some dogs that are just, you know, they're the fun police. They're the nuns on the playground, and it's everybody settle down. You're having too much fun, which that's not okay.
Right.
Okay.
So in the event that I notice that she's doing it out of line, how do I correct her in a positive manner to where she doesn't associate this correction with the puppy, but with her action?
Okay. Yep. Excellent question. So anytime we're seeing, you know, like we mentioned a little bit ago with Cindy's question of being a referee and kind of mediating our dog's interactions, I don't ever want to be scolding. I don't want to use the tagline. And I definitely am not using a water bottle, a squirt bottle in those situations, because I don't want any of the dogs to be thinking that their interaction and playing or the other dog is getting them scolded. That's not the issue. It's what you're doing. Right. So to pinpoint that, what I will do is, if your dog has a really good recall, you can call them and you're just going to do a little timeout with them. And I don't mean timeout in the crate. I mean, you're just going to have two fingers under their collar to get them away from the play. And then you're going to practice like 30 seconds of settle. So you're just going to be doing long, slow strokes. You lower your tone of voice, your rate of speech, while you're saying settle. Good settle. They do start to get the correlation with that energy level. We just want them to tone down, take a break for like 10, 15 seconds. Then you release them back to play.
Okay.
So that way they can give it a try again.
Right.
As long as they are playing appropriately, yay, continues. But when that behavior that we don't want happens again, you do a recall, or you go over, put two fingers under the collar and do a back away. So we're not dragging them out of play. You can put a treat by their nose, do a back away, settle, good.
Okay,
settled. Let's try it again. Okay, release them back. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. Quick note on that. How to redirect. All right. What else is going on, guys?
Sarah, I just have another quick question for you.
Yeah.
It's in regards to stealing items that Little Miss should not have. This week she discovered the trash and continues to discover our boots. I live in Maine and I have L.L. Bean boots that are like leather. And so she thinks that they're a great toy and she will drag them around the house. She also, like I said, discovered the trash. And so we've put the trash up on the counters and we're closing the door to the bathroom and the laundry room, which I don't know if that's the right approach or not, of just trying to like just move everything out of her way. I have taught her the drop it cue.
Okay.
But I had this moment the other day where I was like, oh, wait, maybe I'm inadvertently rewarding her for stealing my socks, the trash, the whatever, because she knows when I say drop it, she will be praised or rewarded or something.
Uh-huh.
Looking for some advice.
Okay, so excellent that you've taught her drop it command. And kind of the ground rules that I use with the drop it command is if you were practicing drop it in a training session, absolutely use treats. If it's a real life scenario where they have taken something from you, use drop it or just take the item.
Okay.
Don't use a treat because you are exactly right, because then you're basically bartering.
Well, that's what I was saying to my husband. I was like, wait, now she knows. She's too smart. But what I was doing was she was playing with this like little dinosaur. And that's how I was practicing drop it with her. I was like passing her the dinosaur, putting it, she would put it in her mouth, play with it for a second. I'd say drop it. I'd click and treat the second she would do it.
Perfect.
But we don't do that when she actually steals something. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So in a training session, yes, you can give her rewards for that. But when it's real life and she's running around with your $150 snow boots in her mouth,
yeah,
don't be trading with her.
Okay.
Then just go ask her for a drop it or just don't chase her. Just calmly walk up to her and take your possessions back. Okay.
And should we be keeping all of these things like in a way she can't get them?
Yes.
Because so, this is the one thing is like, this is real life. She's going to be in someone's home and they have stuff around. Huh? You know what I mean?
But okay. So eventually, yes, you will get to the point where the wicker laundry basket is back in the bathroom, where you can have your shoes by the back door. Okay. You will get to that point. But right now she's a puppy. Everything is really intriguing and everything is going to go in the mouth and has a risk of being destroyed and chewed. So when we have puppies, do yourself a favor, prevention, just be putting these things out of sight, out of mind. So especially things like winter boots, Uggs. Oh, Uggs are awesome.
Puppy. The slippers. My husband has L.L. Bean. We live in Freeport, Maine, which is where they're located. Yeah. Freaking everything's L.L. Bean. She loves his slippers. She ate a hole in it. He's so upset because now he needs new ones. So, we're okay to do like harm reduction, basically.
Absolutely. Okay. So things that are going to be very tempting. So Uggs, slippers, boots, socks, bras, remote controls, Bluetooth earpieces, and eyeglasses. For some reason, anything that has our earwax on it, they love. So things like that, put them away, put them in a drawer, put them behind a closet door, just save yourself the trouble. Then, you know, a year from now, next winter, chances are, can you leave your boots by the back door? Probably.
Okay. Thank you.
So do some prevention in that way. I will say though, with trash cans, that is one of those pick your battle kind of thing. Dogs are scavengers. And trash cans are hard because there is always something that's going to be rewarding in them. And it's a self-reinforcing behavior. And I mean, for millennium, dogs have always been scavengers. That's how they survive. So I gave up long ago. All the trash cans are behind cabinet doors, or they're in pantries.
Yeah, I was just saying, what if we just get ones that have closed tops to them? So she,
you can't.
Would she figure out how to do it? She'd probably figure out how to open them. God damn. Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say, based on the little bit that I know of your girl, she's going to watch you step on that step thing and see the lid flip up once, and then she's going to go,
Okay. All right. Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
So easier to just put them, you know, a kitchen, especially your kitchen trash or your bathroom trash. We put them underneath the sink.
Okay. So thanks.
It's just, I never have to worry about the trash can getting raided.
Thanks. Okay? Appreciate it.
Yeah, she would figure it out. That reminds me of when I was training service dogs. One of the tug commands was, of course, that you would have a dish towel or a tug rope attached to the refrigerator or the oven door, and the dogs would learn to tug these things open and retrieve items out of the fridge. So one of the dogs that I had that was in our training program was pretty far advanced in his training. And so I was trying to generalize his commands to lots of different locations. So I brought him to my house and I was practicing these kitchen tug tasks with the refrigerator and retrieving items out of the refrigerator at my house. And I got that creepy feeling of, you know, you're getting watched. And I turn around and all four of my dogs at the time were lined up sitting at the edge of the kitchen with their heads cocked and just, you could see the wheels were just turning that they, you know, they're like, look at what the golden retriever can do. He can open the fridge. Never again did I let one of the service dogs practice that with my dogs witnessing, because I was like, oh no. And they did. They were trying it. Any dish towel that was hanging off of an appliance after that, just from watching it once. Yeah. Okay. What else is going on, guys? Everybody's quiet.
Hi, I'm Megan. I have a 10-week-old puppy. And so previously I had a 15-year-old beagle. So I actually had to move the trash can out into the garage because beagles are very good at finding a way to open up even child locks. So, but in any event, so we moved into like everyone home for 2 weeks. And now the kids are back in school. I have two older kids, 11 and 14. They're in school now. And I'm trying to work from home. And so he's not a huge fan of being crated when he can hear us. So I'm trying to work on increasing the crating time a little bit. But the, you know, the cries are just as if he's being injured, and they're just heartbreaking. Any advice?
Yep, they are good at really making us think that they're dying.
Yeah.
So have you found the modules on crate training on the website?
Yeah, I've just skimmed, in honesty.
Okay. So what you're going to want to do is go back to, I can't remember which step precisely it's going to be, but it's going to be where you are working on excuse me, increasing the duration of puppy being in the crate and being quiet, whether you can briefly walk out of the room and out of sight or not. And I'm saying briefly, okay? So that is going to be rolled into structured crate training sessions. So when you've got a work meeting scheduled, don't be doing this. That's real life. And we have different strategies for that, okay? So go into that module with the crate training, kind of review those steps. Mm-hmm. And then every day, set aside some time to be actively working on that crate training, okay? Because it's basically like us trying to get in shape or an athlete. Puppies are building their endurance for being quiet and being confident and quiet and calm in a crate. So we have to work on building their duration, the time, but also building their duration on us just briefly walking out of the room, being out of sight. Okay. So that's going to be crate training steps. For real life, what you can do when you do have, you know, work to be done and puppy needs to be in a crate because you can't be supervising because you're working, is having puppy in a different, in a crate, in a different part of the house with a sheet to cover the crate. That's going to be described in the crate training modules as well. So mm-hmm. It's a lot like parrots that if we cover, a lot of times it kind of encourages them to be quiet. So if puppy is quiet, they can keep the sheet up. If puppy starts to woo woo and get noisy, sheet goes down. Okay. So it's a consequence for what they're doing. And other things that are going to help with trying to kind of minimize the noise is have a TV or a radio on in that room. So there's going to be some background noise and puppy is hopefully not going to be as likely to hear you and be upset. Okay. And even though it sounds like puppy is completely dying, if you've gone through your mental checklist of puppy just went out to go potty, so I know we don't have a need there. Puppy has had a drink. Puppy has been fed. Puppy's not hot or cold. Okay, their needs are met. So if you've gone through that mental checklist, then unfortunately, you just have to have some tough love. Do not give in and let a puppy out of the crate when they are crying. Otherwise, we are reinforcing that and rewarding the noisy. Okay?
Yep.
All right. So go back and reread some of those steps in the crate training modules where you can set aside structured training sessions every day. Okay? And then the real life, you're just going to have to be trying to manage some of the noisiness because, of course, not crate trained completely yet. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. And shut doors and all those things in between you and where puppy is crated. TV and radio and covering the sheet, that does tend to help. And also fixing them something to do to keep them busy in their crate, a Kong smeared with peanut butter or sweet potato or banana, bully sticks, knuckle bones, so that it's a good time, a good association, and they've got something to do to keep them entertained. Okay.
All good. Thank you.
Give it a try and keep me posted on how it's going. And if you're having any problems finding any of the crate sections in your modules, okay?
Yeah, it's all very new. It's all like a lot of transitions at once. So, any animal or human would have a hard time with it, but it's so heartbreaking. And I'm like, wow, I just don't remember this. But, it's been a long time since I had a puppy.
Well, yeah, we forget pretty quickly, but also every puppy is different. So this one,
different breed, different, all of it.
So this one might be more vocal than your beagle was as a puppy, or you might just be having selective memory as well.
Probably a little of both. He's pretty vocal, although Layla, our beagle, she was more of a howler. He's more of a bark whiner. He's a Quaker, so he's shrill.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, you know, if you've gone through your mental checklist, you know, you can kind of just laugh and be like, oh, the drama. You're not dying. I know you're not. Okay. And just be more persistent than your puppy. All right. Anything else, Nancy, Laura, Karina?
No, just wanted to thank you for your help the other week. I can now eat and make dinner in peace.
Yay!
Thank you. The idea of you're in the X pen in the same room that we're eating with a small Kong filled with cream cheese gives us 10 minutes of peace. So thank you.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. And the 10 minutes will expand in duration, you know, just like with Megan and the crate training, the duration will get longer. Just be persistent and don't change those expectations.
Yeah. I've started leaving her in the X pen as well, like while I'm trying to work, because to Megan's point, it's impossible to be on a call for work when your dog's going bananas. It's like people can hear her on the other side of my house. She's so loud. And Megan, it's exactly that same thing. It's like, she sounds like she's dying. Like somebody asked me on a call the other day, like, is your dog okay? And I said, yes, I promise. She's just having a meltdown. But like, I need her to get to the point where she can entertain herself for more than 5 minutes, because we're just not going to be able to live otherwise.
Yeah. And one thing for both of you that, you know, if it is a scheduled, you know, working from home and you listening to woo-wooing going on is one thing. But if you're like on a work call and you really need some quiet, you might want to play around with, again, this is management, this is not training. But for those times, if having puppy in your office, in a crate, or, you know, in their X pen, in your presence, that might help them.
Yeah, I tried that initially, and people in the background were like, your dog is about to crawl out of that pen. Like, what is wrong behind you? Like, what? So I tried that because I thought, oh, maybe if I'm just closer to her. No, I think she just wants me to hold her.
Yeah. And so I was going to say, you have to play around with that, because for some dogs, it does work. So for example, with the exception of wrestling that was going on earlier with my dogs, being in my office, they are going to be much more quiet than if I close the door and have them outside, because then they're just going to start headbutting the door of why can we not be in there? So, you know, Megan, that might help for those times when you do need quiet during a work call, but I would test it out first.
So I tried. He was just extremely annoyed that I wasn't playing. Okay. And then when I took him out, it was as if, like, what do you want with me? Like, I'm ignoring you.
I had a moment the other week where she loves the car now. Initially, she hated the car, but she loves her crate in the car. And I almost was to the point where I was like ready to put her in the damn crate in the car just so that I could like have peace for 30 minutes. She's still in a crate. She's not going to do anything, but she likes the car. And then I wouldn't be able to hear her. I don't know if that's cruel, but
no.
Definitely crossed my mind.
No, I mean, because, hey, you have to work, you know, you've got these, have to work so that you can pay for the
dog. I told her, I was like, I have to work so that I can buy you bones and treats. Otherwise, there's nothing coming your way.
Yep. I mean, and hey, their crates are their bedrooms. And if she's liking her crate in her car, yeah, nothing wrong with that. So long as it's not freezing, freezing cold out there.
I wouldn't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, it's okay. And that's actually good training, because then she's learning to generalize that crate behavior, good crate behavior, to other locations. Mm-hmm. You know, So for down the road, hey, you're going to travel and go to a hotel, make crates in a hotel room. Okay. Same rules apply. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to visit family, crates at family in their guest bedroom. Okay. They do have to, yeah, they don't generalize that automatically. So it's not a bad training session.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. It will get there.
Thanks.
All right. Well, it will get there with the, but do keep on working with your crate training and working on building the duration of being out of sight. Okay. And there are a couple of videos on Facebook as far as on the Facebook page, where I had different steps of that and demoing, just working on the out of sight aspect. And I wrote some notes on that because that is kind of a separate step unto itself, where sitting right next to them in a crate can be a whole different thing versus, you went around the corner. Now I can't see the people. So, all right, guys. Looks like most everybody has signed off. Last call, questions, concerns? Okay, well, happy training. If you've got questions in the meantime, please feel free to shoot me an email. The email addresses are up at the top of the chat box. Or you could always throw a question or concern on the Facebook page as well. Otherwise, next call is Tuesday the 11th at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. So happy training, guys. Catch you later.
Thank you.
Thank you.